Are you ready to join me in transforming fear to freedom? That's the objective of the show. Are you ready to explore with me and my guests? Are you ready to get into the deep and play? This is where it's at, and that's what it's all about. No medical advice here. Use discernment and decide for yourself if the information is right for you. All views and opinions expressed on this show belong to the individual and are not necessarily shared with the producer of the show. Want more details? Go to letsgetrealchattingwithcatherine.com. Now let's get real and have some fun. Who are we going to explore with today? Come on with me and let's get into the deep. Welcome back to another episode of Let's Get Real, chatting with Catherine, where we just love to explore higher visions. And I tell you, today's show is going to be one of those, really something I've been curious about for a long time, and that is the Camino, pilgrimage, the journey, why people do it, what's it all about. And my guest today is Ariana Rose Brackenberry, and she has had quite a bit of experience with this adventure, and she's going to share with us what she's learned and all about it. She's working on more pilgrimages. She's done it more than once. She's a business owner. She's passionate about working with people and helping them to get into their own inner wisdom. I love this from her LinkedIn profile. She says she's helping people shift from yeah, but to what if thinking. And I just think that's so empowering. I just love it. So welcome to the show, Ariana. It's my pleasure to be sitting down for a chat with you today.
Thanks, Catherine. I'm really delighted to be able to share with you some of the things I've learned on my journeys on the Camino.
It is such an intriguing pilgrimage. It's unlike any it's unlike any that I've heard of before, and it seems to be gaining some popularity in recent years that more and more people are starting to know about it. Of course, there's a movie out about it, if I'm correct. And that maybe is helping to shine a light.
Yes, the movie The Way came out with Martin Sheen probably in 2011 or early 2012. That started the North American, it got the attention of the North American people. And then the new movie that just came out last year, which is called Walking the Camino, is a documentary film about six people and their journeys on the Camino. So the two movies is one from a very sort of slightly romanticized.
Right.
And the second one very much looking at six people in a very more real place. The amount of pain that actually can happen and what happens when we come up against that wall of pain. What needs to happen. So the Camino, in essence, will take you where you need to go on your journey. I think that's why it's calling so many people. I think a lot of people are hearing a call. They don't know what it is, but there's this sense that their heart is yearning for something more in their lives.
Right, right. And, I mean, this particular pilgrimage has been around since the Middle Ages, since, from what I understand, it's the end result is the burial place of St. James, a saint who was beheaded way back when. And this is supposedly his burial grounds. But so there began this pilgrimage there, which would be sort of a Christian pilgrimage. But it's way beyond that today, is it not?
It's very much so. I think there's some statistics on who goes and whether it's people go for very spiritual reasons. Some people, that's the main calling. And for other people, they're looking for more a connection to their selves, to their heart. And whether it's gone for from the Christian perspective, there's people of all walks and natures on the trip. And people will go because they have cancer and they're wanting to find out, do some inner journeying to find out maybe there's a solution, maybe there's some wisdom inside of them that can help them heal their own bodies. Or people will go to honor somebody who's died. People will go just because they don't even really understand why. I think that was for me. It was just this, as soon as I heard it, I knew I had to go.
You It's not a, it's apparently not a religious experience at all. It's a very much spiritual, human, grounded from some of the stories I've heard. I mean, this is where you really find yourself in these kinds of journeys. What you really did find on the journey?
I got so much more connected to my own wisdom. And for me, one of my company names is Awakening Yoda. And for me, that actually speaks to that we have this inner Yoda that's inside of us, this wisdom that really is wanting to come out. And often what happens, Catherine, is our lives get so busy that we often don't sit down and actually take the time each day to actually listen to what our hearts and souls are calling us to. There's so much going on. There's things to do. There's to-do lists. There's all the phone calls to return. So what the Camino actually did for me is it allowed me to hit the pause, and it allowed me to just, it was such a relief almost to go into this place where there's little doing. It's just being, and it's really the simplicity of it that calls me back over and over again, is that sense if I get up in the morning, I have really no decisions to make other than, you know, how much breakfast I'm going to eat. I'm wearing the same clothes. Life has been brought into a very simple place with everything I need on my back. And then it's just walking, and it's simple. I go in one direction. I'm heading towards the Santiago, and where St. James is supposedly buried. There's a little controversy there sometimes. And I just find, I feel like I'm playing hooky a little bit. It's kind of like this, it's so much of a relief to just get into that quiet place and to be able to allow that deeper connection actually physically to Mother Earth, to the ground, to get myself more grounded. I sometimes tend to, I'm a computer programmer in the past, and I do tend to get in my head sometimes. And this, there's something about walking this journey that really gets me back in my body.
So from what I've researched on it, it appears that there's more than one path, pilgrimage or one journey or one route to the destination. And is one, or I don't know how many there are, maybe you know that. And is there one that's recommended for, you know, an easier route, or is there, or what would you, how do you feel about those?
Well, there's many routes, many of them which are on my list to go and explore. But the main route that the majority of the pilgrims are on is called the Camino Frances. And it starts in St. John, which is in St. John Pied-de-Port, which is in France. And the first day is walking over the Pyrenees and into Spain. And then it just progresses. So you actually walk through four different districts of Spain, and you get to experience immense changes in culture as you're walking, the different foods, the different wines. There's nothing that says you can't enjoy a good glass of wine at the end of a long walking day.
Wonderful. That's a good point. But so is there this path? It's going through villages and communities, and you can, is the intention, do you just walk, or do you take tours of these little villages, or how does it practically speaking manifest?
It's actually designed, or it's actually been around for, as you said, hundreds of years. The path is really very well marked. It's got yellow arrows that point which direction you're supposed to go. There's little towns. Most of the guidebooks will have a route for the day and a picture of the elevation, so you can get a sense of what the walk is going to be like for the day. And the guidebooks will also say where the places to sleep are. So all these tiny little towns, which are very much self-supportive, like what you would find in a town with, you know, maybe 100 people, there still is a pharmacy, there's a supermarket, there's the support that's actually funded by the pilgrims, because in essence, most, you know, towns that are 8 or 10 kilometers apart in Canada would never be able to sustain having that level of infrastructure in the town itself.
Right.
And then once the people get to the town, so there's albergues, which are like hostels that we would call in Canada, and they're designed specifically for pilgrims. Each pilgrim gets a passport at the beginning that allows them entrance, and they get a little stamp each place they stop. So it creates a wonderful memory of the journey. And there's that support is there for the whole way. Very rarely does anybody ever have to walk more than maybe the longest day without a town would maybe be 15 kilometers or 20. But for the most part, it is significantly designed to support the pilgrim on the journey. And it actually creates an immense difference for the people in the northern Spain in terms of the economy.
Right. And so when you're doing a pilgrimage, you don't have to, unlike a holiday or a, you know, where you maybe book ahead your hotel room and your so forth, this passport, does this mean you don't exchange money with the people, or it's a permit for you to have permission to stay, but you still have to have the right amount of money to exchange? Or, you know, because sometimes you hear about going to some of these remote areas and you might have to barter or whatever. Does that go on, or how does the ease of that happen?
You do have to pay. Some of them, like the very ancient albergues, which have been around for a long time, are mostly by donation. And the expected donation might be €3 to €5. Those ones will often have what we call a communal dinner. So they have, the pilgrims will actually participate in creating a meal. So it creates a little bit of community.
Wow.
Then, so it's a, you know, there's a multiple ways and to stay on the Camino. So essentially the basic level would be that. And then the next level up would be more of a private hostel type of thing. And in those cases, the prices are a little bit higher, but you're not sleeping with as many people. Mm. I just say on the Camino, you actually get to sleep with new people every night.
Interesting.
And, nobody. Yeah. So sometimes you can get in a room with 50 people or, you know, you can imagine what the energy is like if there's 50 to 100 people and there's people snoring and there's people that are restless and people are going to the bathroom. So from the low end, that would be where people would stay if they were on a strong budget. The next level up from that would be to stay in a higher end hostel, which would be a little smaller, maybe 12 people to the room. And then from there up, people go and actually have their trips booked in hotels and small casa rurales. And they can actually count on their accommodation at the end of the day because they've pre-booked where they're going to stay.
Mm. And does that mean, you know, hot bath and all that kind of stuff is available too?
Well, there's showers obviously in the hotels. You're going to have the opportunity for a bath and you're probably sharing maybe with one person.
Mm.
The difficulty is because of what you mentioned earlier, Catherine, is that the Camino has increased substantially in popularity.
Right.
So what was there in 2011 has changed even to when I went in 2013 in terms of the busyness. So it's often now I'm seeing and witnessing people getting up and starting to walk at 6 a.m. Mm. in order to find a place to stay because there's so many pilgrims on the road. So the advantage of, you know, pre-booking then allows one to walk at a pace that's a little more just what the body is wanting and not feeling like there's a rush to get somewhere in order to find a place to sleep. So there's some advantages to being in the moment, and which is, you know, perfectly fine as well. And then there's some advantages to be able to say, you know, I'm just going to sit for lunch for an hour and a half because I just love the view today. And I just want to sit and journal for a little while. And then I can mosey on down the road when I feel ready and I'm not really worried about where I'm going to sleep, or I'm not worried about being kept up awake by the sounds of others.
Yeah, I would think that that would be, you know, I mean, it is a journey, an inner journey for sure, but part of the inner journey, even not on the on a pilgrimage, is having to, as you process what you're finding, what you're discovering, the challenges within you, and then having other people around with their challenges, it adds another layer that can make it more, I'm going to say, rich in a way, the experience more, it, you know, you find out who you really are, what you're made of when you're, it's one thing to do it alone, but eventually you are going to come back to populations, your family, your whatever. So having those kinds of situations, it must really call you, like call what's deep within you to be able to go through the arduous walking, the exploration, and then either face, you know, even if it's three people and they're all strangers, that experience in itself has something very rich and deep from my perspective. Was that your experience, or?
It totally is. That because I walked alone, I found, firstly, I met amazing people. I think there's something to be said for the whole thing of, you know, being able to cooperate inside a room, to be able to, you know, have compassion for the other people in terms right. of, you know, just honoring that the lights are out, that there's actually a curfew at 10 o'clock at night in most of those places. And there's a reason for that. It's basically they're supposed to be quiet between 10 p.m. and 8 a.m. or actually 6 a.m. Mm. And there's something, even for the people who decide to book the rooms, then there's something to be said in making sure that you still have lots and lots of time to connect with all the multiple nationalities that you're going to meet. Because the walking time itself for the average day means you'll be in about 2 o'clock in the afternoon or so. Now, some of the days are longer, so it'll be a little later.
Right.
Then one washes, then there's the laundry to be done. So there's, you're washing your clothes out for the next day. You're having your shower usually at the end of the walk. And then you've got from 2, 3 o'clock at that point till 10 o'clock to actually now start to connect with the other people that are walking on a level that's, you know, curiosity of what brought them to the Camino, how are they doing. And what's interesting is the conversation is so, the whole Camino levels everyone to one place. There's no status, there's no, you know, I walked beside a deputy minister, somebody in the government, and he had blisters and sore feet and was puffing and had the same problems as everybody else. But nobody really cares what you do. Right. It's this one thing of people just want to know, how are your legs?
Right.
You know, right. Everybody's curious about, that's the questions that get asked. Nobody cares what you do for a living. All they're wanting to do is, how is the Camino for you? How was your day? And it creates this wonderful camaraderie. It's that the tribe.
Yes.
That whole thing of you become part of a huge tribe, because you remember millions, you're actually walking in the footsteps of millions of people who have walked exactly the same paths. And it's along the ley lines of the planet as well. So then you're getting all this. These are the things that people actually are probably not as conscious about for the most part when they're walking, is that there's an energy along the path. That's why it's that particular route, is because it's along these strong spiritual lines in the land.
Right.
And it's you know, I, that's what, for me, it's like, I was contemplating, Catherine, just this morning, I was contemplating, what is the function of having this pack on my back and walking when my feet are so sore that every footstep can cause pain? It's like I have to really be aware. I'm taking my steps carefully. I'm slowing down. I have no thoughts of in my head other than my physical at that point. And yeah. I'm becoming very, very grounded. In some ways, having sore legs is a good thing on the Camino, because we can get into a rhythm and walk really quickly because our bodies are moving smoothly. But the injuries or the blisters or whatever it is that's coming up for someone actually has, in my mind, not that I want people to suffer, but there's yes. something in that that allows one to be really present.
Yes. Yes, I can see that. And really aware of their body, but also that connection to the earth, that, you know, that to me feels like the unencumbered by, you know, telephones and duties and obligations. You're just, that's it. You, your body, your spiritual body, your all the elements that are you and the earth. I mean, you can't get much simpler than that.
No.
And yet deep, and profoundly deep, you know, simple, excuse me, and profoundly deep.
It is. And I think one of the reasons the whole route, that northern route, or the Camino Frances route that we were talking about, is actually 800 kilometers. And people sometimes hear that and think, oh my gosh, how is it even possible that I can walk 800 kilometers?
Right.
You know, for us in Calgary, it's maybe the distance to Saskatoon or the distance to Esoyus. So it's when we chunk it down, like anything in life, when we can distill it down to, well, I can do 20 kilometers or 30, and all of a sudden over 33 to 38 days, I can do 800 kilometers. And it's really, you know, being able to understand that it's possible for people to do it. For many that think that they can't, it actually is very possible.
Yeah, well, you were mentioning at the beginning that some people do it when they're ill. That kind of surprised me. That you would think, you know, a lot of people might think that doing something like that, I'm going to walk 800 kilometers or miles, or I have to be in really good shape. I have to be really healthy to do that. And yet you're saying people are choosing this as a means to their healing.
They actually do. And, you know, what's interesting in the movie, there's a lady with a three-year-old, I believe it is, in a little, you know, stroller, and she's pushing this three-year-old for the whole journey.
Wow.
And, you know, and she's, it's a great movie. I have to highly recommend it to anyone who's listening. And it's just called Walking the Camino. I actually show it in Calgary. If people are local, they can come and join me in a movie night and a Camino question night. And it's a wonderful, it's the best movie that I've seen that really depicts the pilgrimage and the Camino in a real way.
Right.
It just shows how friendships come, people that walk together. Sometimes there might be some kind of romance that shows up, and it's not really the necessarily why people go, but sometimes that's what occurs. And it's really what I find is it's the Camino will walk you.
Huh.
You know, you might go out with a sense of, well, I know exactly where I'm going to stay, and I know where I'm going to walk to, and I've got my plan. And all of a sudden, on my first Camino, I actually walked with someone who was, his pace was a little bit faster than my normal pace. And I'd already had quite a bit of leg problems. And this person was a great walk. We were in conversation, maybe talking a little bit, and I didn't realize that I was walking a little faster than normal. And the next day, I couldn't walk. I literally went to go to the washroom, and I'm leaning against the wall to get to the washroom.
Oh, no.
And I'm thinking, oh, my, you know, there's that thought, oh, dear, I've really wrecked this. You know, there's that first thought that comes to mind is,
yeah.
Oh, crap. And I ended up taking a cab to the next town, sat for 2 days. And continued on my journey. So sometimes what will happen is the best laid plans get set aside, and spirit has a way of knowing what's best. So, you know, it's...
Right. You might not know what reason you didn't walk that leg, that particular part.
And also what is interesting, at that particular town was a healer that I had wanted to meet. I'd read about him in the guidebook. I would have missed that town because it would have been on the morning time. I never would have met that person, and I actually ended up getting a healing from him on the second day. So
right.
I met people on that day that I wouldn't have met. So it's really in that realm of people I had been walking with were going ahead, so I wasn't going to be with them for a while. So I was actually, I had an opportunity to start to make some new friends, to just sit.
Mm-hmm.
I think for me it was huge.
Well, and yeah, you're speaking to that, really going with the flow, like this happened and now I'm in this situation, and so see what wants to show up. But when you were talking about, as you were walking and you were walking at a faster pace so you could keep, you know, conversation was flowing with this other person, how do you know when people, you know, because some people maybe don't want to talk at all during this whole time, or how do you do that dance with people? Like, everybody's at their different places. Is it just like in everyday life, or like, how would you know that it was okay to be having a conversation as opposed to this person's in silence? How do you know that?
In general, I think it's the same as we know when we're standing in line at the grocery store.
Mm.
Some people will chat and some people won't. And some people are, you know, I think in this case, I'd met this person on day one.
Right.
I hadn't seen him for a little while. And we're catching up. How was the journey? And so there's a conversation flow. What will happen is that I think it's just a natural feeling. For
right.
the most part, I actually encourage people. I'm taking a group, and my encouragement in the group is really from the place of saying, let's set some intention to have a couple hours in the morning that are just our silent time.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a time to process, and each person in the group agrees at some level that we're going to be in silence. So your question is very much appropriate, because some people do want to have that space.
Yes, for me, if I was doing that journey, I think that's basically what I'd be thinking, is that this would be my time to connect with spirit, with my inner wisdom, with Gaia, with the whole space that I'm in. And although I can see... for me, I don't think I could be silent for the whole trip, that's for sure. I don't think I've ever been silent for a whole day. But I'm thinking that in terms of, you know, there's that social element in the evening, like you say, but on the walk itself, that whole thing, I can see where the value in the silence of, you know, the silence of not talking, but at the same time, the amazing sounds perhaps of the earth that you would be able to hear from that. You know how when, for me, as a kid, when you walk in snow, when it's, you know, really, really cold, and you hear that crunching, or you hear the branch, or the, you know, little, those subtle sounds, I think you would hear, I imagine you would hear that in that kind of silence, even without snow.
That's totally correct. And I mean, where it's the birds, or it's just the wind rustling the trees, or whatever it is, the silence allows one to be more present.
Mm-hmm.
And my sense is, as much as possible, the thing is about rules is rules are a good guideline, or
yes.
It's intention. And I think if we have intention to walk in silence, and it's pretty easy, people know fairly close. All you have to do is just say, you know, I'm walking in silence this morning. I'd love to chat with you at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
Most people will respect that. And I think you do have a lot of time. Now, that being said, it's also, there are times when you just hurt. And having a conversation with someone can help get through when it's close to the end of the day and there's 5 kilometers to go, and it feels like your feet or your knees or your legs or whatever the shins are, whatever it is that's hurting, it just feels like having someone to talk to at that point can help you get through the day.
Right, right.
You got trouble, and I got them too. There isn't anything I wouldn't do for you. We stick together, see it through. 'cause you've got a friend in me. You got a friend in me. Some other folks might be a little bit smarter than I am, big and stronger too.
When you, for somebody who's, now, you've mentioned you are doing these information nights in Calgary, Alberta, Canada, so anybody in this area that can tap into that can go to, we'll give Ariana's websites and information. I'll put the links on this so that people can get to them. But I'm just, you're doing a pilgrimage. Is that still open? Can people join you, or how does that work? That if somebody's listening to this now and thinking, gosh, I am really feeling this calling to me, this is what I need for my spiritual self, is there, you know, let's get into some of the specifics. Is there age limit? Is there any restrictions, or what would be the criteria that to become part of your particular pilgrimage?
My group that I'm taking very small. There's a trip in May and there's a trip in September. Both of them are half Camino, so it's a little less mileage. It's certainly a lot less. It's probably a little under 400 kilometers. But who I'm inviting into the trip is basically people who are interested in more the inner journey, that want to take the time. They're specifically drawn to the Camino for a sense that something is calling them, and they're really open to exploring into that inner place. And I actually will be doing pre-Camino coaching calls, getting people prepared. There's not just there's a physical preparation. There's a mental preparation. There's a spiritual preparation. There's, you know, so all those things come together. But the piece that often I find that is missing is the spiritual component of what a pilgrimage is and how to actually get oneself into a state for a pilgrimage. So there's that part of the training. So who's the ideal person, or the person I would think would fit into what I offer, as opposed to somebody that's going to be more of a tour guide that, you know, points out, you know, you're going to spend your time going through museums or churches a lot. You're going to spend a lot of time there. I'm more about an inner journey. And those other pieces are part of it, but they're not the focus.
Right.
Whereas some guides would be more around the history and, you know, being really connected into the museums and things like that. The person is probably over 45 and up, because they're experiencing something in their life that's more of a sense of they're at a crossroads.
Right.
That's what often calls people. There's a sense either someone's died, they're at a transition point where the kids are gone, the marriage is broken up, the husband's died, the wife has died, something has shifted.
Right.
And there's sort of a sense of, where do I go next? You know, for me, it was because I had got to 60 and I had gone through, basically, I kind of lost everything. My husband had died. Then I was in a business where I was writing software for Kyoto, and that, after 2 years of working on that ended up having to close down. And then I, you know, my computer business disappeared and I had to sell my home. So I found myself at the end of all that with, what on earth? I'm 60 and, you know, what is my life going to look like? I was actually at the point where I didn't know how to even process. That's how low I had gotten.
Right.
And so, so the pilgrimage itself got me back. I found myself again. I was, you know, I was in that place of, where on earth am I going to go? And what am I going to do next? So it brought me to that more clarity on what was important to me. And it shifted me from being a computer programmer, which is, you know, I'm phasing out almost completely, to being a spiritual coach, helping others along their journey. And it got me connected to how deeply passionate I am about the planet and this earth.
Right.
I mean, I can find myself choking up a little bit, but it's just that I really realized how important it was to me to be outdoors and connecting to people as opposed to computers.
Mm-hmm.
So it created a dramatic shift in me in terms of where I'm going as I'm moving into my years of being a sage, as being someone who has wisdom to share with others. So that's the kind of person that really, Catherine, you know, somebody that's on a search, they feel passionately about the planet. They want to make a difference. There's that sense of, what's my legacy going to be?
Yes, you know, yes.
What is that? Will I matter? Do I matter? If my kids are gone, now what? Now what? How do I matter now? How do I matter? What is my, you know, what's next? How can I, you know, there's all those questions that come into our minds. I think they may not be defined as that.
Mm-hmm. But you know, the thing too, Ariana, that I'm really aware of is that for many people, there's the process of growing up. You're in your family's home. Then you leave home. Maybe you go to university or college or away for a job. You might get married, start your own family. Everything seems to have an order of time. You know, this happens and that happens. And sometimes, for a lot of people, it's so ingrained in us that this is the path, that after those things stop, then there becomes this place of where you didn't do what some people do in their youth. You know, some people do take a year off and travel Europe, or they wander, they don't go to college, they don't get a job, and they just wander. Some people do their wandering stage and finding themselves stage in their youth, whereas other people don't ever have the chance, the opportunity, or it doesn't seem right, or they feel like, oh no, ever since I was 7 years old, I knew I was going to be whatever, a doctor, or, you know, a housewife, a mother, or, you know, the things seemed already set in place and that there was no need to question. And then you get to this sort of, like you say, around 45-ish, maybe you've had the career, maybe you've had the family, maybe things have fallen apart, or maybe they haven't, but you just don't know who you are. You haven't taken that time. And it feels to me like that could also be part of it, that it's just that time when you matter, when you recognize, I actually, beyond my service to family, community, and so forth, there's a part of me that I don't even know. And that's what, for me, and what I'm feeling about this is that this could be the opportunity to find that piece of you, that gem, that amazing part that you didn't even know was in there.
I think that's very, very true. It's a good analysis of sort of in our society specifically.